ॐ श्रुति स्मृति पुराणानां करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादं शंकरं लोकशंकरं शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। In the last class, we saw that the Vedanta Pramanam is the only means for gaining Atmajnanam because all the other Pramanams are extrovert. They are capable of revealing only the objective world, and the objective world we have seen before is Anatma only. So therefore, we ask the question that how can the Pramanam, the Shastra Pramanam, which is in the form of words and sentences, reveal Atma or Brahman? Because scriptures themselves point out that Brahman is beyond the description of words. In Taittiriya Upanishad it was said, Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. Again, in Keno Upanishad it was said, Na tatra chakshur gacchate, na vaag gacchate. And in many other places in Upanishad itself, we find it is being pointed out that words cannot describe Brahman. So, the Upanishads also being in the form of words, how can it reveal Brahman? It would be contradictory to the very Shruti Vakyam itself. We also saw that even logically speaking, the words will not be able to reveal Brahman, because if the words have to reveal anything, any object, then that object should fulfill certain conditions. And if those conditions are not fulfilled, the words cannot function in that field. We saw last time five such conditions or criteria which are technically known as Shabda Pravritti Nimittani. Nimittani means conditions or reasons or criteria. Pravritti means functioning. Shabda means the words. So Shabda Pravritti Nimittani means the conditions for functioning or operation of the words, meaning verbal pramana. So we saw what they were. They are Rudhi, Jatihi, Gunaha, Kriyaha, Sambandaha. So, words can reveal an object if that object is evidently available for all. Then, we can have a commonly understood expression like sun or water or earth because you have experienced it, I have experienced it. Then we have an agreement that let the sound symbol sun refer to the sun, or the sound symbol earth refer to the earth, etc. So words can reveal an object if there is a property, right? So if the object has a property through which we can reveal, because the property will always be resting or having its locus on the object itself. And therefore, if we point out the property, then we will be able to reveal the object. Or as we saw before, words can point out an object through a function, which can be called as Kriya. We saw last time, you came to my house for lunch and I tell you that please call the driver up for lunch. So I don't know who the driver is. You know, I don't know the name of the person. I've never met the person. But I refer to him by his function and say, please call the driver for lunch. Or words can convey through sambandha. For example, if you don't know the name of an object which is kept on a table, then you can use an indirect expression as, whatever is placed on the table, you please bring that. So I was able to convey this through a relationship which we can call as the Adhara Adheya Sambandha, meaning the supporter-supported relationship, because such a relationship is there between the table, which is the supporter, and the object, which is the supported. So through the object, I can refer to the table, or through the table, I can refer to the object. So I communicated or revealed through the relationship. So Adhara Dwara Adheya can be revealed, and Adheya Dwara the Adhara can be revealed. This was Sambandha. Finally, Jati. We saw last time it means an object which belongs to a particular species. And if you use a word to reveal a member of a particular species, then the same word can reveal any other member belonging to the same species. So we have Rudhi, Jatihi, Gunaha, Kriya, Sambandha. These are the Pancha Shabda Pravritti Nimittani. And the unfortunate thing with regard to Brahman is that Brahman does not have any of these conditions. So Brahman does not have Rudi. Rudi means the popular experience, as in the case of sun, earth, water. Now if Brahman is commonly available, like the sun, then I can tell you, oh, you know, that is Brahman. Or I can say, okay, call that Brahman. But Brahman does not have Rudi. Rudi's another name is Pratyaksha Prasiddhi, or Pratyaksha Vishayatvam. So popular availability, Pratyaksha Prasiddhi, is not available there. The second condition of Jati or species is also not available. There is no Brahman species. And why Jati is not available? Species is possible only in a case where there are many members belonging to the same class or characteristic. So human species we can talk about because there are many human beings. So species in general we can talk about because there are many objects. You cannot talk about species with regard to something which is only ekam. The sun species you can't talk about because sun is only one. You can't talk about Akasha species because Akasha is one. In the same way, Brahman you can't talk about because Brahman is ekam. Brahman doesn't have jati. So we saw that Rudi or jati will not work for Brahman. What about gunaha? You can't reveal Brahman through its properties because Brahman is free of all properties. It is nirgunam. So revealing Brahman through properties also not possible. Then can you reveal Brahman through a particular function like cook Brahman, driver Brahman? This is also not possible because Brahman does not have any function. It is Nishkriyam Brahma. So Gunaha Nasti, Kriyaha Nasti, Jatihi Nasti. What is left out? Sambandha. You cannot talk about Sambandha also. Because Sambandha requires two. Relationship requires two. And Brahman is Ekameva Advitiyam. One without a second. One non-dual without a second. So how can you talk about a relationship with regard to non-dual Advayam Brahman? So Advitiyatvat Sambandha Nasti. Nirgunatvat Gunaha Nasti. Nishkriyatvat Kriya Nasti. Ekatvat Jati Nasti. Pratyaksha Agocharatvat Rudhi Nasti. Therefore, Brahman cannot be revealed through words. So, Vedanta Pramanam cannot function in the field of Brahman. This is the objection raised by some people. And Shankaracharya himself refers to this in the Mandukya Bhashya. Now, what is our answer? The answer is that even though words cannot reveal Brahman by a normal method, still words can ingeniously reveal by using extraordinary or special methods. And the Upanishads manage to do that. And that is why we say a guru is required to handle the words of the Upanishad, because the words of the Upanishad do not function in the normal course, but they function in an extraordinary way. And so the Upanishads use different techniques for this purpose. And we will see four such methods used by the Upanishads. What are they? We say that Upanishad can reveal Brahman by using apparent attributes or unreal attributes. So even though Brahman does not have any real attributes, the Upanishads manage to reveal Brahman with the help of mithya attributes or apparent attributes. This is one method. What is the example? One example is revealing the sky by using the blue color of the sky. Now, the blue color of the sky is not the real attribute of the sky. What is the color of Akasha? Hey, Akasha does not have any real color, but it has got a mithya color, which is blue. Therefore, I can reveal Akasha through mithya attributes. Similarly, the blue waters of the ocean, the blueness can be used to reveal the ocean, even though the ocean water does not have real blueness. Again, I can reveal the sun by talking about the rising sun and the setting sun. But, you know, the rising and setting of the sun are not real attributes of the sun, because we know that the sun does not rise or set. It is the earth that is going around in the opposite direction. So, the first technique which is used is words which can reveal Brahman with the help of apparent attributes, mithya attributes. And in the case of Brahman or Atma, what is the apparent attribute that we use? The apparent attribute is Sakshitva, the witness attribute of Brahman. Because that witness attribute of Brahman or consciousness is not the real attribute. It is only from the standpoint of the mithya prapancha, the mithya srishti, that we say that Brahman is Sakshi, or Brahman is called as a witness. So Brahman does not have even Sakshitva as its real attribute. But we use this apparent status and we reveal. So this was method number one. The second method that we use is we can use a temporary or incidental attribute to reveal an object. The incidental attribute is not the intrinsic attribute of that object. The general example given in the Shastra is a person revealing a particular house which is amidst many similar houses. Suppose there is a colony in which there are several houses, all of which look the same. Same color, same type of window, everything is the same. And somebody wants to know which one is the color of Mr. So-and-so. Now, I cannot talk about the color, because the color is the same for all, the height is the same, the windows are the same, everything is the same. I was wondering how to reveal the house. At that time, what happened? Fortunately, a crow came and sat on that house. Now, the crow becomes not an intrinsic attribute of the house, but it is an incidental indicator. So Kakavat Graham, Devadattasya Graham. The house with the crow is the house of Mr. Devadatta. And this person who understands now the house, he knows that the crow is not a permanent attribute, because the next day, if he comes, the crow will not be there. So everyone knows that it is an incidental attribute. Similarly, consciousness cannot be easily revealed directly, but we use the temporary association with the body and we point out that consciousness is that which is not a part of the body. Consciousness is that which is not a product of the body. Consciousness is that which is not a property of the body, but it is something different which pervades the body and makes the body sentient. So this body is not an intrinsic part of consciousness, because the body will die after some time. And even though consciousness and the body are not permanently connected, I use this temporary body, this incidental body, to reveal the permanent consciousness. Therefore, what is the second method? By using an incidental attribute, we can reveal Brahman. Recalling, the first method was by using an attribute which is apparent, and the example was Sakshi. The second method is using an incidental attribute, we can reveal Brahman, and therefore we can say Dehi, the one who lives in the Deha, Kshetrajna, the one who knows the field of experiences, etc. Then what is the third method that Shastra uses? The very absence of attributes can be used as a method of communicating Brahman. For example, imagine that there are several glasses or tumblers, and in all the tumblers, some object or other is there. In one, water is there. In another, Coca-Cola is there. In yet another, tender coconut water is there. And in one more, sugarcane juice is there. In another one, milk is there. Whereas, in one glass, there is nothing. Now, what do I say? Please bring the empty glass. What do you mean by the word empty? Emptiness is not a positive attribute of the tumbler. Emptiness reveals the absence of things. So even though the absence of things itself is not a positive attribute, for example, what is the color of emptiness? You can know the color of Coca-Cola, but what is the color there for emptiness? So emptiness is a negative attribute, yet it is capable of revealing that particular glass. Another example, when there are several people wearing spectacles, and if there is one person who doesn't have spectacles and I want to talk to him, then I can tell you, call that spectacle-free person. So here, what is the attribute that I have used to reveal the person? Not the presence of things, but the very absence of spectacles becomes the attribute. It's a peculiar attribute, no doubt. One more example. I can tell you, please call the bald man. So what is baldness? Baldness is not a positive attribute. It refers to the absence of hair. So when there are many people with hair, then a person without hair has got absence of hair as the attribute. Thus, the absence of hair becomes an attribute which can be used for revealing. So when we say Anantam Brahman, So when I use that word Ananta, limitless, to reveal Brahman, what is the attribute of Brahman? The absence of limitations becomes the attribute. Attribute here is within quotes, because Brahman is actually Nirgunam. Brahman is Nirgunam Brahma, Nishkalam Brahma, Nirakaram Brahma, all Nir-Nir, the absence of attributes. So this was the third method used. So far we have seen that apparent attributes can be used to reveal Brahman, incidental or temporary attributes can be used to reveal Brahman, and the absence of attributes can be used to reveal Brahman. And the fourth and final method is, without talking about Brahman, you talk about something else, and indirectly you talk about Brahman. So you don't directly talk about Brahman, but you talk about something else, and indirectly you talk about Brahman. So actually you talk without talking. Let's see an example, because we do these things regularly. Let's look at the first example. Supposing there are two of your children, and the mother says, Swaminiji, the elder son is very intelligent. Now the younger son feels bad. Even though the mother has not said a word about the younger son, the younger son is very upset, because by saying the elder son is intelligent, you have indirectly said that the younger son is not so. One more example. There is a glass of water and three people are sitting. And after some time, one person goes out and comes back. And in between, in his absence, the water has been drunk. Now this person who goes out and comes back asks the question, who has drunk the water? I say, I have not drunk. What does it mean? The water in the glass is empty. So when I say I have not drunk, indirectly I have conveyed that the other person has drunk. So this is called communication without communication. I have talked without talking. We can also call this as Mauna Vyakhyanam. People think that Mauna Vyakhyanam is silence. No. Mauna Vyakhyanam is where you indirectly communicate. Let's look at one more example. Supposing somebody comes and talks to me in the morning. Now, at 11 I have to leave for the class. And this person comes and goes on and on talking. Then I say, hey, at 11 o'clock I have to leave for the class. The person who's sitting there says, Swaminiji, I'll go right now. Now, I never asked the person to go. Did I? No. I communicated something without verbal language. And indirectly what I said was, better you leave before 11. Let's see one more example. A person is leaving in his car and I ask, where are you going? And this person says, I will drop you whenever you want, wherever you want. Now, I have only asked, where are you going? But without language, I have asked another question, can you give me a lift? And the other person has understood also. So, there is a method of non-verbal communication. Communication without communication. And the Upanishad uses this method, which is called as Neti Neti method. It does not positively talk about Atma. It only negates all the Anatma. It doesn't positively talk about the subject Atma, negates all the objects. So when all the objects are negated, what is left behind? The non-negatable subject. Saha neti neti atma. Atma is not this, not this. After negating everything, whatever is left behind is Atma. In Keno Upanishad, Atma is said as Anyadeva tad viditad atho aviditat adhi. Atma is neither known nor unknown. Then what is left behind other than known and unknown? There is only one thing, and that is the knower principle. Because known is also an object and unknown is also an object. So the knower is the only one who is other than the known and the unknown. Anyadeva tad viditat atho aviditat adhi. So the fourth method is the method of implication or lakshana vritti. So by using one or more methods among these four methods, the Upanishadic words successfully reveal knowledge. Now, lastly, we will discuss one more important topic. Words will and can give the knowledge. However, a knowledge is complete only when the knowledge becomes intimate knowledge, which is in the form of direct experience. So, intimate knowledge in the form of direct experience alone becomes complete knowledge. This is what we generally see. A person describes the beauty of Gangotri, the beauty of Badrinath, and I study books and books on Gangotri and Badrinath, or I talk to many people who have visited, and I do get knowledge from the words. Yet, however clearly I get the knowledge, I know that the knowledge is incomplete unless I directly and intimately experience Badri or Gangotri. Therefore, normally we find that knowledge has to culminate in anubhava or experience. So, we see that normally words are capable of giving only knowledge. All right. Yet words are not capable of giving direct experience. And without direct experience, knowledge is incomplete. So naturally the question will come that Vedanta is in the form of words. And being in the form of words, Vedantic Pramanam gives only knowledge, and the knowledge is incomplete unless it is converted into direct experience. So how can Vedantic knowledge be complete? This will be the next question. And therefore, only people talk about the incompleteness of Vedantic study, and they talk of varieties of sadhana to convert the knowledge into experience. They invariably say that Brahma Jnanam is different, whereas Brahma Anubhava or Atma Anubhuti is different. So how can attending the classes give Anubhava or Anubhuti? They can give only knowledge, and the knowledge will be invariably incomplete. So this is the next question. How can Vedanta give Brahma Anubhava? And that is how people introduce meditation sadhana. So they say Shravanam is for knowledge and meditation is for Anubhava. like reading a book on Gangotri is knowledge, whereas going to Gangotri is Anubhava. And thus Jnana Anubhava Bheda people will talk about. Now this is very important, and we have to clearly understand this, otherwise we will have a lot of problems if we are serious students. Now we say that Vedantic words or Vedantic teaching, which is in the form of words, can only give knowledge, because words can give knowledge only, we admit, and words can never give Anubhava, that also we admit. Words can give knowledge only, and words cannot give Anubhava is admitted. But what we say is that Vedanta does not give Anubhava, and Vedanta does not want to give any Anubhava at all. Vedanta does not give, and Vedanta does not want to give any Anubhava, because according to Vedanta, we don't require any new Anubhava. We don't require any new experience at all, because our problem is not the lack of any experience. Our problem is the lack of knowledge alone. Remember, all our experiences can be broadly classified into two types. One is Dvaita Anubhava and the other is Advaita Anubhava. So all possible experiences involving us can be categorized into two types, Dvaita Anubhava and Advaita Anubhava. According to Vedanta, all of us have gone through both types of Anubhava. So no human being lacks Dvaita Anubhava and no human being lacks Advaita Anubhava. Everyone has gone through both Anubhava. How do you say so? You must be knowing that in the waking and dream states of experience, we have all gone through Dvaita Anubhava, wherein I experience myself as a subject and experiencer different from the object. So in the Jagrat Avastha, my experience is Dvaita Anubhava. In Swapna also, where I clearly experience the subject-object duality. And this experience is called as Savikalpa Anubhava, an experience which has duality, which has division. And in this Dvaita Anubhava, not only do I experience division, I experience myself as an individual I. I experience individuality. I experience localization, meaning I am in this time and space as a separate individual, different from others. So, individualized experience I go through, localized experience I go through, and naturally, I am a finite I or an infinite I. Naturally, I am a limited I. So I experience an individualized, localized, limited I, which is called as Dvaita Anubhava. I have gone through another experience also called the sleep experience. And in this experience, I never have the division of subject and object. And so my experiences are not, or my experience is not Savikalpaka Anubhava, rather it is Nirvikalpaka anubhava, an experience in which subject and object duality is not there, and in which I am not an individual entity. There is no individuality in deep sleep. There is no localization in sleep state. In the waking state, I say I am an individual. But during sleep, I cannot say that, and I do not locate myself. Therefore, naturally, I do not experience any limitation also. What I experience is undivided, unlocalized, unlimited I during the Sushupti Avastha. And this is a clean Advaya Anubhava, which everybody has gone through. So thus, Dvaita Anubhava we have gone through in Jagrat Avastha, and Advaita Anubhava I have gone through in Sushupti, which is, so other than Dvaita Anubhava and Advaita Anubhava, there is no third Anubhava possible. And you cannot say that there is another type of Advaita Anubhava. You can certainly have a variety of Dvaita Anubhavas, but you cannot talk about varieties in Advaita Anubhava. So Advaita Anubhava we have all gone through. There is no question of a different Anubhava. So Vedanta does not want to give you any new Anubhava at all, because all possible Anubhavas we have gone through in our Avastha Trayam, in these three states of experience of waking, dream and deep sleep. So then what is our problem? According to Vedanta, our problem is not lack of Dvaita Anubhava, not lack of Advaita Anubhava, nor the lack of any other Anubhava or experience, because there are no other Anubhavas possible. So then what is my problem? What is the problem? The problem is in Dvaita Anubhava, I experience myself as a limited I. In Advaita Anubhava, my experience of myself is as limitless I. So limited I have experienced, and limitless I have experienced. Not only in the present, in future also you will keep on experiencing more and more. So our problem is, one of these is our real nature. Limited I is my real nature, or limitless I is my real nature. You cannot say that both are my real nature, because both have diagonally opposite features. Therefore, one I cannot be. Both limitless and limitless is not possible. Therefore, the only possibility must be that one of them must be my real nature and the other one must be incidental nature, which is not my real nature. One should be Swabhavika Dharma and the other should be Agantuka or incidental Dharma. Either I should be really limitless in all three states, but incidentally appearing as though limited, or I should be really limited and incidentally appearing as though limitless. So which is as though and which is original? And unfortunately, before the study of Vedanta, we have always concluded in the wrong way. We have successfully misconcluded. And what is our conclusion? That the limited I is my real nature, and the limitless I, obtaining in deep sleep, is only an incidental nature. So I assume that limitlessness is only a costume and not my nature. This is our conclusion. So the problem is not lack of experience, but our problem is wrong conclusion based on the available experiences. So experience-based misconclusions is our problem. Therefore, the aim of Vedanta is not presenting another experience, not presenting a change of experience, but only to question our conclusions and to rectify them. So what should be the rectified conclusions? That I am the limitless one, which is my real nature. The status of being a human being, the limited human experience that I go through, is only an incidental costume. As somebody very nicely remarked, you are not a human being behind, you are not a human being requiring a spiritual experience or gathering a spiritual experience. Rather, you are a spiritual being temporarily having a human experience. We have misconcluded that we are human beings, and therefore we are looking for a spiritual experience, whereas the teaching is that you are a spiritual being with an incidental human feature which is only for a few decades. Therefore, Vedanta does not give a new experience. Vedanta does not want the students to expect a new experience. Vedanta only wants to correct our self-misconclusions which have been based on our available experiences. Mandukya Upanishad analyzes the available avasthatrayam, the available states of experiences of waking, dream and deep sleep, and come to proper knowledge. So Vedanta assists you in arriving at the proper knowledge. And that proper knowledge should come in which avastha? The proper knowledge can come only in the waking state, because in the dream state you cannot be taught. In the deep sleep you cannot be taught. All that is to be done is to revise our conclusions based on available experiences. Therefore, Vedanta gives knowledge, and that knowledge is enough for liberation, because our problem is lack of knowledge. Our problem is not lack of experience. And that knowledge Vedanta can happily give. And so this we will see from the next class onwards. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.